On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, the next to last day of 2014. That's right, it is December the 30th, the 30th day of December 2014. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. That's our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the righteous, rowdy, raucous, real-time experience that is The Horn chat room. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Carol Baker, News Ninja. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Man Cave and Sparky. Good evening, Mr. Gibson, with, I'm sure, more to wander by in the next few minutes, and perhaps throughout the course of the program. You, too, are welcome to wander by the Horn chat room and participate in the raucous real-time experience. Just go to Head On Radio Network, click on chat room, pick yourself a screen name, password, and away you go. Hot diggity. Yes, of course, also at headonradionetwork.com. You'll find the Listen Live player, which is handy when you're at a PC. If you're on some sort of mobile device, we recommend the apps from Stitcher and TuneIn, and hope someday, to have a Horn app all of our own. Maybe we'll put that on the list of stuff to get done in 2015. How about that? Yeah. And, of course, in addition to the Listen Live button, you can access the podcasts and the archives also from the main Horn page. And you can also find a little page that's labeled Contribute. That's how we keep this all on the air. You'd be surprised. It is a righteously small group of people that keeps this whole thing going. And, we'd love to see more people participate in that, if it's financially possible. At any rate, we try to raise $150 an evening, and we are trying to raise that this evening between tonight and tomorrow night. Actually, to finish the year okay, we would need to raise like $425, I think, is what I calculated. But that's probably not going to happen. So We'll try to get to $150 per evening, if we can, just to keep things, you know, sort of lurching along and paying bills and all of that happy stuff. Although, you know, $425 would be pretty freaking awesome into the bargain. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy, loud and clear on TuneIn. I do appreciate hearing that from you. And it's Titanic Tuesday, isn't it? Titanic Tuesday being that day that we celebrate the titanic intellect of the right wing. And titanic it is indeed. Of course, the name of Titanic Tuesday comes from something our friend Jim heard years ago now. Jim was listening to the 962nd tier right wing blatherer over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, when he took a call from someone asking him why it is that there's seashells in the rocks in West Virginia, Steve. To which he replied, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Mm-hmm. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic candelabrum. Titanic. So, yes, taking that as our clue, our cue, that is where we get the idea for Titanic Tuesday and celebrating just
how truly titanic right-wing intellect can be. Now, I'm going to start with this one, because I actually had to double-check time. I went over this several times looking for clues, you know, little breadcrumbs, little sparkly things that would tell me that this was from yet another in the seemingly ramped up proliferation of websites that just make up outrageous stuff and put it out there without really trying to tell anybody it's satire, you know, to create link bait, et cetera, et cetera. I couldn't find anything. To suggest that this was satire, even bad satire, like what you get from the Daily Current. Well, I don't know. Now I'm wondering. I'm going to have to check something real quick before we go here, because the problem with this stuff is it's so eminently believable. Maybe. I don't know. Well, let me just throw it out there. You find out if this is real. Okay, I'm looking a little further down. This has got to be satire. It's got to be. Because I know it seems like I'm kind of lost here, but I've been sort of going over this story all day long. Okay, so it comes from a place called Daily Leak. And I got this email from a couple of different folks and saw it on Facebook. You tell me if this sounds like satire. 100% of newly elected Republican senators have agreed to vote to eliminate the food stamp program, including Senators Cory Gardner, David Perdue, R. Georgia, Gardner, R. Colorado, Joni Ernst, R. Iowa, Tom Tillis, R. North Carolina, Tom Cotton, R. Arkansas, James Lankford, R. Oklahoma, Steve Daines, R. Montana, Mike Rounds, R. South Dakota, Shelley Moore Capito, R. W. V., and Ben Sasse, R. Nebraska. If this is satire, it is very, very well camouflaged satire. Check the chat room. See, that's what makes, if this is satire, that's what makes this bad satire, because you can't tell the difference between this and reality. Small businesses and the American people cannot afford President Obama's countless new regulations and tax increases. There's a right way and a wrong way to improve our country's welfare system, and the president's policies just aren't working. We need to put poor people first and lower costs, Senator Gardner said in a statement. Maybe it's the fact that there's no links to any of the statements is what keeps getting makes my spidey sense tingle. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is an overreaching federal program that has actually worsened the nutritional standards in this nation and increased costs. I'm one of the millions of Americans who wish this program would end. To make matters worse, SNAP benefits are discouraging full-time job creation. We need to repeal the SNAP program and replace it with more affordable free market solutions. That's cited to incoming Senator Perdue's campaign page. And then the piece says, the senator signed a pledge to approve any legislation in 2015 that would completely defund the $78 billion SNAP program. I'm offering this as what I hope to God that this is bad satire. And you go down to the comments and somebody says, you know, this is a fake news story. Well, that's the trouble, though. And that's why I include this in Titanic Tuesday. The right wing in this country have become so hateful, have become so utterly disdainful of anyone who isn't at least, which Republican was it who said, if you're not making $1 million a year, you're not wealthy? I don't know. 2015 and the run-up to the presidential campaign of 2016 that all of 2015 is going to be is looking to be painful, stressful, freaky. Because, see, there really are Republicans out there who think, Pastor Brother Minister John Starve Hagee being one of them, if a man will not work, neither let him eat. They cite that one all the time. A sitting member of the Congress from the state of Tennessee cited that as a reason that he voted to give himself an increase in farm welfare payments at the same time he voted to cut food assistance to hungry Americans. The problem, and what makes this Titanic Tuesday material, is that you cannot tell the difference. This sounds like a Republican platform plank. Because, in essence, isn't that what they did in 2014? This is the retrospective part of the program. No, it's not. Isn't that what they did in 2014 when, along with some quisling Democrats, they agreed to just hack the bejesus out of the SNAP program at the same time that they, increased farm welfare payments for, among other things, absentee landlords? Isn't there another time in history, not necessarily American history, but in history, when governments have favored absentee landlords over smallholders who were struggling just to farm to subsist? Yeah, I think that was called the enclosure. It's not a pleasant time in history, and it apparently is something that the Republican Party would like to revisit, even if this story ain't real, which it doesn't appear to be. But when you're talking about the Titanic intellect of the right wing, you just about have to have some sort of highly sensitive scientific device to sort out the fake from the real. Because if you ran up and you asked Joni Ernst, for instance, how do you feel about the SNAP program, you would probably get some sort of a statement along the lines of, those who know will not work, neither let them eat. Right? Yeah. Note coming in from Tim from L.A., the subject line is, support Bob. Well, we're not supporting Bob, we're supporting the Horn, Tim. And the Horn is a community that we have all built together. Tim writes, I was listening to my local Pacifica station, and they were short $120,000+ in Los Angeles. They charge between $25 to $365, up to $2,000 tax-deductible donations, to maintain a $3-plus million-a-year budget to keep the stations going, at a bare minimum. I like Pacifica, Tim says, but they're nowhere near what Bob does. And it's not what Bob does, it's what we here in the Horn community do together, Tim. They rarely take calls, and because they're on terrestrial radio, one's speech is limited by the FCC, therefore you cannot say the fucking teabaggers are shit-eating douchebags, or if you do, you face a fine. Yeah, $150 a day is a lot of money, Tim continues, but the investment into the Horn is probably more important than just Pacifica because you can converse, not conversate, you idiotic moron. Notice I added in the idiotic. Tim spelled it right. With Bob and I actually learned something, so please support the Horn with anything you can. Thank you, Tim. Thank you very kindly. And remember, it's not just me conversating. For instance, tomorrow, being New Year's Eve, we agreed last night, I do believe, we engaged in some consensus-based decision-making there, Treebeard and Vinegar and Celery. And I'm not throwing a block, really, I'm not. I want to share some of my concerns about all this, you know, like before we go down that road. It's not a block, I'm not blocking. No, we found consensus, and we agreed that we would do a special prayer meeting New Year's Eve Wednesday on the front porch. And that's a whole lot of people besides me talking. That's y'all talking. Anybody who ever wants to can participate, either on the Gizmo line or via the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. Yep, indeed, the chat room group is filling out. John's wandered in, so has Jug of Punch. So's Michael. Mr. Gibson's here. Stockton Larry's come by. Texas T is with us. Tim from L.A. and Todd are all with us. Yep, and probably even more to come. I think it's really fun when we get so many people in the chat room that you actually have to scroll to see them all. I like that. So just a little something to start the Titanic Tuesday inquiry. Note coming in from Jim, who invented Titanic Tuesday. Satire? End food stamps, they can end it, they will, mark my words. And that's my point. It's a fake news story, but it's only fake insofar as it hasn't formally been done yet. Let this Senate get sworn in. Let this House get sworn in. You know, once they get past dealing with the fact that the third most powerful Republican in the House well, has a taste for hanging out with the Imperial Wizards and Grand Kleagles and Ultimate Dragons and, you know, various folks from the Clavern, Steve Scalise. Sure. But if you don't think the Republican Party would end Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, SNAP, what used to be known as food stamps, what used to be known as commodities, if you don't think that they'd do that in a minute, you ain't thinking. Because these people are reactionaries, all right? These people are not, by any stretch of the imagination, the Republicans of yore who would say, well, wait a minute, hold on there, Haas and Pfeffer. We can't be closing out the food stamp program because, after all, there's a lot of money that goes to our supporters. You know, the people who own the grocery retail chains and so forth, the American Grocers Association, and they wouldn't be happy with us at all. No, these are... Understand, the Republican Party that's about to take power in Washington, D.C., they're... Literary reference. And that's the nice thing about doing this program. I can do literary references, and everybody goes, yeah, I got it, Bob. Whereas if you were doing this on terrestrial radio, and God knows if you were doing it on the right wing, they'd be scratching their pointy little head and say, there's a who? No, the Republican Party that's about to take power in Washington, D.C. with the coming of the 114th miserable Congress, or the miserable 114th Congress. Not all Congresses are or have been miserable, but this 114th Congress is going to be because of its makeup. With the coming of the miserable 114th Congress, what we're going to have is the legislative branch of the constitutionally ordained and established government being run by Snopeses. And I'm not talking about the site where you go to find out if something's a hoax or not. I'm talking about that family of vicious ne'er-do-well, cutthroat, slash-throat, cut-purse, kill, stomp, stab, rob, do anything to get ahead, gang from William Faulkner's mythical Yoknapatawpha County, Mississippistan. We're going to have a Congress full of barn burners. Snopeses. Yeah, Flem Snopes. So I think Jim's point is well taken. It ain't necessarily satire. That story read more like prophecy than satire. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly for getting us started on the fundraising for this evening. Much appreciated, Jeremy. Much appreciated indeed. So, on the heels of that not quite real story, we got stuff to go into that'll make you howl. I mentioned Joni Ernst a few minutes ago. Now, didn't I? Why, yes, I did. Well, Joni Ernst is the incoming senator from the state of Iowa, Stan. That's Iowegian, isn't it now, Barbie? Is that the Iowegians? Yeah. Thank you, Man Cave. The Daily Leak is a satire site. I love their disclaimer, as Sparky provides it to me. The Daily Leak uses invented names in all its stories, except in cases where public figures are being satirized. Any other use of real names is accidental and coincidental. Only they did use real names, and they used real names of real Republicans who really would, given half a chance, gut everything but the military, the military-industrial welfare complex in the name of, I don't know, Ayn Rand, liberty, freedom. Wolverines! Yeah. Exactly. But anyway, back to Iowa for a moment. Steve King, who will in the 114th Congress have more power than he has ever before had, because once again his tenure and his his tenure will have increased. His seniority, that's the word I was after. I mentioned a little bit ago that the third most powerful Republican in this incoming House, Steve Scalise of Louisiana, Stan. Well, it turns out that he decided to go and address a bunch of white supremacists. And it is causing it was discovered by Little Green Footballs. And the group Euro, European American Unity and Rights Organization, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, serves primarily as a vehicle to publicize David Duke's writing and sell his books. David Duke, Klansman. Yeah, that David Duke. Well, never let it be said that there is a right-winger out there who can do any right-wing thing that the Republican Party will not jump up and defend. I mean, if there was a picture of Steve Scalise standing in one of those shiny red satin Imperial Dragon robes, right? The Republicans would say, well, he was just trying it on. It's not like he wears it to work. Enter Steve King in an interview with the Washington Post. Now, you'll have to sort out for yourself why the Washington Post would ever find it necessary to consult Steve King about anything, including the weather. But they did. And he says that the Republican right wing will stand shoulder to shoulder with Steve Scalise. And, of course, he's not lying. It's true. Now, let a Democrat do something like that, or maybe on the opposite end of the spectrum. Oh, wait a minute.
How many times has that Al Sharpton done been to the White House, right? Al Sharpton.
You see, there's actual evidence of that. Rudy, noun, verb, and 9/11 Giuliani has already played that card, I think, hasn't he? Yeah. So, Steve King was interviewed by the Washington Post for comment on Steve Scalise's taste for hanging out with Klan types. And Steve King's defense was as follows.
Jesus dined with tax collectors and sinners. It's not the healthy who need a doctor. It's the sick. Given that piece of scripture and...
Wait a minute, I thought he was going to describe Steve Scalise. And given that piece of... Never mind. Shoe leather.
Given that piece of scripture and understanding that Scalise probably wasn't staffed thoroughly...
Oh, look, a caveat. You want to use the little fork on the Titanic silver service for your caveat.
I could understand how something like this happened. But I know his heart. I've painted houses with him post-Katrina, and I know he's a good man.
What'd you paint on the houses, Steve? Surrender Dorothy? Yeah. So, much as Dem Leader back in the Reign of Error looked into the eyes of Vladimir Putin's soul, so too, Steve King knows Steve Scalise's heart. Of course, it's worth remembering that Steve King also knows that there are deadly young Mexicans crossing the border who have calves the size of cantaloupes. That's why he is Steve Cantaloupe King. I'm going to take one day off. I'm going to take New Year's Day off. I'm going to try to forget everything. I'm going to ice down some really, really cheap beer. We'll make some Hoppin' John with some black-eyed peas and rice and celery and onions and a little bit of hog jowl. Got to have hog jowl on New Year's Day because that's eaten high on the hog, up on the jowl, you see. Have some greens. Got to have some greens. Yeah. And then come January 2nd, we are going to dive into 2015 with a freaking will. Because by the time this Congress comes into session, I got a feeling that's the way they keep the right wing keeps progressives from becoming really, really effective. We spend all of our time on defense, defending as we can the last little morsels that they have not yet managed to steal and give to their buddies on Wall Street. Right. Yeah. No, we're going to be busy. Okay, goodbye, Steve King. I'm sure you'll be back. Like, not a bad penny, but an awful penny. Right. Oh, quick trip to the mailbox. Note coming in from our friend Luta. Interesting factoid, Bob. Iowa means the sleepy ones in Dakota. They're referring to the Sauk and Fox Indians. The sleepy ones. I would like to know the Dakota word for the stupid ones, so that we would know what to refer to Joni Ernst and Steve King as. And yes, Andy sorted it out too. Thank you, Andy. I just did a quick Google search, Daily Leak Satire, and found this link from the page. Yes, and that's, he said, who was it who said totalitarianism always looks like a parody of itself? I think it may have been Voltaire. The problem I always have with satire like the Daily Leak and the Daily Current is that these sites always make me want to scream, don't effing encourage them! I actually know people who won't get to eat if the Rapiglicans ever pull that stunt. So do I. A whole bunch of the state of West Virginia is, well, we'll be going back to that former Republican diet plan of circa 1930, three meals a day. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. Because you know what? When people are hungry, it makes them willing to work a little harder and take a little less. And that's the way Jesus wanted it. Don't you understand? Andy says, I hope you and the rest of the Hornedonistas have a happy new year. And you too. You too, Andy. Thank you very kindly. This in from Ron and Raleigh. Remember, Bob, David Duke said he was not against black folks. He was just for white folks. See? Simple. No white supremacy there. Well, no, not at all. These are not the Kleagles you're looking for. These are not the Kleagles we're looking for. No, not at all. And thank you very kindly, Dan. Thank you, Dan, for helping out this evening. That means we have only $125 to go for fundraising this evening. Much appreciated. Thank you ever so kindly. I hope folks will stand up and join up next to you and Jeremy. It'll be mighty nice. And one last trip to the mailbag. I got a nice note from Paul from Parts Unknown. The tins of Palmans have gone out, he tells me. So those of you who got the Palmans, be watching your mailboxes. And that includes Jim from Louisiana, Stan. Paul has some inquiries. I am confused, he writes, about the friction between the NYPD and the NY mayor. There is a story on CNN today about how the graduating class at the NYPD Academy booed the mayor. I don't understand, Paul notes. How it is the mayor's fault that a mentally unstable man shot and killed two police officers in cold blood, or what the mayor of New York can do for the NYPD that he isn't doing? I know they're upset with him. Is there another reason, and this latest incident has inflamed the previous issue, if there is one? Or did I miss a request the NYPD put forth to stop these kinds of shootings in the future, like bulletproof glass in all police cruisers, but the mayor didn't approve support it? What am I missing? Well, what you're missing, Paul, from Parts Unknown, is the fact that Mayor de Blasio of New York has a wife and a couple of children who are melanin-enriched. Yes, can't pass the paper bag test, and therefore they are not white enough to suit a police benevolent association that could get that you could pretty much lose in a good-sized snowstorm. They're so white. You might note, for instance, that the lynch mob, the Patrick Lynch mob, as News Ninja Carol Baker has named them, that's the police benevolent association of the NYPD. The lynch mob, all of his staffers, all of his close associates and advisors are white. This is just another case of what's the word I'm looking for? Oh yeah, racism in America. Because see, among other things, I ran across a story earlier today about a case of two NYPD officers who were, I believe, working undercover and were of color, and they were gunned down. And oddly enough, there was no scholarship fund set up, and there was no huge hue and cry, because of course the mayor of New York at the time didn't, you get the idea. Paul continues, I grow tired of the double standard when it comes to illegal acts done by people. When an unstable white man shot and killed a whole lot of innocent people and shot Congresswoman Giffords in the head, it was an isolated incident. When a white couple declared revolution against the United States and killed a police officer, a couple of police officers in Las Vegas, it was an isolated incident. When an unstable black man killed two police officers, it's not an isolated incident. African Americans need to step up and do better so this somehow doesn't happen again. Paul says, I guess white people can't possibly do any better as a group of people in the U.S., so telling them to do better is moot. Well, if you look at the long and long tormented history, you might come to that conclusion, Paul. You might. Lastly, a little story about what happened to me, Paul writes, last Saturday. After all the food and excitement from the Christmas holiday, my girlfriend, her 4-year-old daughter, and I went on a short hike in the woods. We went to a place that has a lot of different types of trails, including ATV and motorcycle trails. We hiked up a forest logging road that motor vehicles couldn't go up due to a locked vehicle gate, so we didn't have to worry too much about the 4-year-old walking down the road. While hiking the road, we heard a series of shots from the hilltops on the other side of the large creek we were hiking on. We didn't think much of it, just some people target shooting, and at no time did it sound like the shots were directed toward us. They were shooting away from us. A little short of 2 miles down the road we were on began climbing higher into the hills. After we climbed a bit and were very close to a waterfall we wanted to see and take some pictures of, we heard a large shot ring out in our direction, and the branches about 20 feet above our heads cracked as if a bullet was passing through them. In short, someone shot at us. My girlfriend yelled, "Hey!" and the shot stopped for about 5 minutes or so. We quickly turned around and hiked back down the trail and headed home. Either the person who shot at us thought we were an animal of some sort, even though it is not hunting season, and the 4-year-old was wearing bright colors, or they thought it would be funny to shoot at us but aim high to scare us. I leaned towards the idea they thought we were animals, because it was only about 20 feet above my head and the shot was at least 250 yards away. I don't know rifles too well, but being off by 20 feet at that distance is only a few millimeters of the sight, right? Right. The greater the distance, the more the... error is magnified. Paul continues, if I had been hit, however, I doubt I would have survived anything more than a graze. We were out of cell range. So either I would have had to hike 2 miles back to the car, or my girlfriend would have had to run back to the van and drive to where she would be back in cell range, roughly 20 minutes drive time, and then call for help. By the time she got back, it would be roughly an hour to an hour and a half. I doubt I could have stopped any major bleeding long enough not to bleed out in that time. I wonder if the person who shot at me would have ever been caught or questioned. I would have just been another down payment for freedom and... Wolverines! Just because I wanted to take a hike. But I doubt my death would have done anything for the gun control debate in our society. There's no penalty or nothing that would have prevented a person being that reckless with a firearm to prevent it from happening again. Well, those are my thoughts. Thanks, Bob. Signed, Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you, Paul. And Paul writes that with a considerable degree of calm, although whether it be 20 feet or 5 or 10, having a bullet go zipping past you, whether fired in anger or in negligence, is, to say the least, a sobering experience. And as I told Paul in return correspondence, I've experienced that myself. I remember the afternoon very well. It was a Sunday, and I was trying and largely failing to put together a swing set, the instructions to which were apparently written in Linear A and not subject to translation. So I was left to sort of sort it out by the diagrams of nuts and bolts. And so there I sat on the front yard of our vast estate at the time, and with a hunk of swing set in my lap and another hunk of swing set extending from it out past me, and a wrench and some barked up knuckles, and all of a sudden I heard pew. And a little bit later, a crack and a pew. And it was close enough that I could hear that it sounded like the world's angriest hornet had just gone past my head. It was my drunked-up neighbor. It was his Sunday, too. A sighting in the 22. Just a place, just planking. Just planking. Never mind the fact that my home, my wife, and my children and me were exactly downrange of his plinking. Never mind the fact that he was apparently so intoxicated as not to be able to hit the empty Bud Light bottle that he had set on a fence post at which to shoot. Never mind the fact that he had farm animals, you know, horses, sheep even, walking around in that self-same pasture where he was intending to break some glass. And you do wonder things like Paul from Parts Unknown was wondering. What would have happened? Because, see, when gunfire is involved, the answer to what would have happened is most often death would have happened. Death. And Paul's right about the damage from a rifle round. There's a big difference between getting your back peppered with some 12-gauge at 150 yards and, you know, the damage that a single bullet, you know, doing every bit of maybe 2,000 feet per second will, that's a lot of different damage. But, you know, freedom! Right? And what's frightening is that we live in a country where it is as likely that the shooter, it's as likely that they mistook two adult humans and one juvenile four-year-old human for a family of animals that they wished to poach out of season and kill. It's every bit as likely that that was the case as it is that they decided, hey, listen, hey, Eustace, come here. Yeah. Let's take a bench rest and put a round there about 20 feet over their heads. Yeah, I know. You can, you're a good shot. You can drive nails with that thing. Let's watch them run. It'll be fun. And I've seen that attitude on display here in almost level West Bicol, Virginia. But remember, that's the backbone of our freedoms, right? Yeah. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, hey, Bob, now you see why hiking in the woods is not a favorite pastime for us blah people, particularly since President Obama said, why, sure, you can take your freedom protectors into national parks. Yeah, that was part of his gun-grabbing agenda. Once we get them to the national parks, we'll grab all their guns, okay? Okay. No. What do you mean it's not working? It ain't working. And thank you very kindly, Sylvia, for helping us out as we attempt to close out fundraising for 2014. Thank you very kindly. That takes us down to only $100 to go for the evening, and that's a big deal. So we have that. In point of fact, we've got a lot, really. Hey, let's take a run over to Idaho Stan. You're going to love this. You know, we've talked a lot in the last few months about prosecutorial behavior. In particular, we've talked about prosecutorial behavior in the context of how it is that prosecutors tend to behave in front of grand juries, and how they tend to get the results that they want, and that pretending that a grand jury is operating independently of the prosecutor is nothing but the thinnest tissue of scarcely credible fiction. Well, prosecutors try cases, too. They don't just present them to grand juries. This leads us to Idaho Stan, where in 2013, a man by the name of James D. Kirk, didn't James T. Kirk come from Idaho, too? Well, this James D. Kirk was on trial for a crime that Idaho defines as felony lewd conduct with a 17-year-old girl and sexual battery of a 13-year-old girl. The cases were being prosecuted in Canyon County, Idaho. The Canyon County deputy prosecutor at the time was Erica Callen, K-A-L-L-I-N, Callen. And she was afraid that she was making her closing argument and was afraid that the defense had been, too effective in challenging the testimony that she, Erica Callen, had put forward in support of the conviction of James D. Kirk for felony lewd conduct with a 17-year-old girl and sexual battery of a 13-year-old girl. Remember, criminal cases are often... Oh, okay. Randy says he thinks James Tiberius Kirk came from Iowa. Okay. Well, must have been one of those I states. But anyway, criminal cases wind up being often the mess that they are because you've got someone on trial and the charge itself is enough to turn your stomach. To wit, felony lewd conduct with a 17-year-old girl and sexual battery of a 13-year-old girl. The story comes from the Idaho Statesman, and it is the story of the appeal of that trial. Because Erica Callen, Canyon County Deputy Prosecutor, was successful in her prosecution of James D. Kirk, and eventually, upon his conviction, he was sentenced to 20 years in prison. He appealed for reasons which I trust will become obvious. It's worth noting at this point that no longer is overt racism the sole province of places like South Carolina Stan, North Carolina Stan, Tennessee Stan, Georgia Stan, Alabama Stan, Mississippi Stan, Louisiana Stan, Arkansas Stan, etc. Neo-Confederatism runs all over the country now, including, apparently, Idaho County, Canyon County, Idaho. Here, then, is an excerpt, and the audio is not the best. Quite frankly, courtroom audio often isn't the best. Here, then, is an excerpt of Deputy Canyon County Prosecutor Erica Callen's closing arguments to the jury on why they should convict James D. Kirk of the charges returned against him by the grand jury. I guess I probably don't have to tell you that James D. Kirk, given what you're about to hear, was not a white guy.
Some people know it's the Dixie Song, right? Or the show is in the land of cotton, good times not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away. And isn't that really what you kind of want to do? Look away from the two eyewitnesses. Look away from the two victims. Look away from the nurse and her medical opinion. Look away. Look away.
Yeah, you got that? Idaho. Yeah, look away from the fact witnesses and look over there to James D. Kirk and, you know, wish I was in the land of cotton. Come on, good times there, not forgotten, huh? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You know, our women folk aren't safe as long as them people are allowed to run free, those people. Well, there is a happy ending to this story, I suppose. Oh, okay. Nothing like a Star Trek reference to get people out there working the interweb tubes. Yeah, it's Iowa, not Idaho. Okay, my bad. James D. Kirk will be born in Riverside, Iowa on March 22nd, 2233. So, I was wrong and everybody else was right. Thank you, Michael and Madison. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. And thank you, Randy in PA. Now, I don't know if you call this a happy ending or not. Because, see, here's how it worked out. The conviction was taken up on appeal. And the Court of Appeals overturned the conviction. Not because it didn't think that James D. Kirk was guilty or not. They overturned the conviction and cost the state of Idaho and the county of Canyon, I don't know how much money, but cost them some money, because prosecutor Erica Callen just couldn't resist being cute and referencing the national anthem of the Confederacy. The Attorney General's office defended the case, not Assistant Prosecutor Callen. And they said, Ms. Callen never intended to use a racial strategy in her closing remarks. So what? The Court of Appeals finding that the conviction was tainted because if even one member of that jury was swayed, because the jury verdict has to be unanimous to convict, then it would have been unfair and improper and a violation of his civil rights. Appeals Court Judge Karen Lansing apparently wanted to make it crystal clear for Ms. Callen. She said that this court does not require articles or history books to recognize that Dixie was an anthem of the Confederacy, an ode to the Old South, which references with praise a time and place of the most pernicious racism. What do you want to bet they sang Dixie at that Euro conference where Steve Scalise was giving his little lecture on fiscal conservatism? The court continued, the prosecutor's mention of the title Dixie, as well as the specific lyrics referring to the land of cotton, when in fact Idaho is the land of potatoes, but what the hell rhymes with potatoes, expressly evoke that saying with all its racial overtones. The risk of prejudice to a defendant is magnified where the case is as sensitive as this one, involving alleged sexual molestation of minors. Although the state's case here was a strong one, it was not so compelling that no rational juror could have voted to acquit. Asked for comment, the Canyon County Prosecutor's Office, through spokesman Joe Decker, replied that they would retry Mr. Kirk if the Attorney General's Office doesn't appeal the ruling on up to the Idaho Supreme Court, because there are multiple layers of appeals in Idaho, even a state that tiny. Here's the fun part. Can you just imagine this case getting appealed? And this is the kind of case that does. And you usually wind up with some really, really nasty ends-based legal analysis when a case like this gets appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States, where that dead-eyed freak John Roberts and the rest of the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and that Kennedy character, have been repeatedly telling us that we live in a post-racial society now. Damn it! That's why we don't need the Voting Rights Act. Yeah? Can you just imagine Fat Tony Scalia's opinion, or Sammy Alito's opinion, who once sanctioned the shooting of an unarmed black youth in the back of the head as he was running away and trying to climb a fence? Can you just imagine that? We find today that the Idaho court was in error in suggesting that Dixie has racial overtones. Why, Dixie is merely a manifestation of a proud Southern heritage. Tell me I'm wrong. Just because a prosecutor refers to the land of cotton does not indicate for the jurors that she wishes to make the defendant work picking cotton, especially because because potatoes are grown in Idaho. That's the kind of reasoning you get out of this bunch, the rats. As the old saying goes, watch this space. I have a feeling this case isn't gone away. Not by a long shot. Thank you very kindly, Jack, in Louisiana, Stan. We are now down to $75 to go in fundraising for the evening, and that is most helpful. Most helpful indeed. Thank you kindly, Jack, and Happy New Year to you. And Happy New Year to everybody who has kicked in on this. Thank you kindly to Judith and to Roger, who took care of last night's shortfall, by the way. Thank you. Now that is just a taste. It's just a taste of where we're, of the fields in which we are playing on this here Titanic Tuesday. But it wouldn't be any fun. Remember last night how the metric system crashed that Air Asia plane? Yeah. Yeah, we're going back there. Because somehow, you know, if you're talking about the profound intellect that is always on display from the right wing, and somehow or another you manage not to mention Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, you got getting the job done. And so, before we run off to any sort of a break, probably need to take care of this too. It is abundantly apparent to me, and probably to you, that most of what happens on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda bears only the most tangential relationship to reality. That mostly Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is a channeling of the well, it's like the Ghostbusters movie, where they look down in the sewer and there's just this river of slime. Well, that's Fox. And so they just make crap up. Over at that website that is named after an obnoxious and mercifully dead right winger that happens to rhyme with light and fart. Back before Christmas, they published a story stating that the Obama Food and Drug Administration, is going to ban cake and donut sprinkles. Although the amount of trans fats Americans consume has declined significantly in recent years, the FDA's quest to completely eliminate a particular type of trans fat threatens to eliminate the noble sprinkle used to decorate holiday treats and donuts. Even a small amount of joy is suspect in the FDA's brave new food-monitored world. And I wish the FDA was monitoring a little more food. There probably wouldn't be 5 dead people from eating caramel apples these days. No. A couple of them children. One of them pregnant. And it's a net good thing for the American people who are still obese and in the midst of a diabetes epidemic that we've gotten rid of some trans fats. And oddly enough, major corporations have moved to deal with it and have somehow managed to not go out of business as a result of those job-killing regulations. Right? But not at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. Oh, my God, get the hockey puck.
Well, get ready to say goodbye to your favorite sprinkled donuts like these. The senator and I already ate one this morning. They're delicious. We feel fantastic. But that is because the FDA has anything to do with it. They're getting rid of donuts like these. The agency now regulating America's intake of trans fats for at such high levels, the amount needed to make something as small as a sprinkle on your donut may be banned. But doesn't the FDA have more important things to do than regulate sprinkles? Let's
Oh, you notice the forced laughter. Then regulate sprinkles. A note coming in from News Ninja Carol Baker. Ban cake and donut sprinkles? What's next? Pork rinds and chicken fat? To arms! To arms! Au sort, messieurs citoyens. Oh, wait, that's French. Channeling fellow Scotsman William Wallace. You can take my lord freedom, but you can take my freedom. That's with F-R-E-E hyphen D-U-M-B. You can take my freedom, but you cannot take my lord. Born fighting. Just like Jim Webb says. Born fighting. You cannot have my sprinkles. And sprinkles are outlawed. Only outlaws will have sprinkles. I spit a lot when I do my outraged Scotsman. I just noticed. Yeah, I guess we'll not be auctioning off if we ever get the Kickstarter campaign going. We're probably not going to auction off the microphone. I done spat all over it. Sorry. I don't know. Maybe we could use a Clorox wipe or something to make it better. See how product placement works. Yeah. Oh, well. Well, the senator and Sam Doofus there, they had their sprinkled donut because, well, you may not be able to enjoy them much anymore because of the FDA. And thanks, Obama! It's like my buddy Parson Brown posted, I think it was right before Christmas. It's raining all up and down the Atlantic coast. Thanks, Obama! Yeah. Me without my swirly straw. All right, let's go back to the controversy. Shall we? Why not?
Of trans fats for at such high levels, the amount needed to make something as small as a sprinkle on your donut may be banned. But doesn't the FDA have more important things to do than regulate sprinkles? Let's ask the author of The Food Police, economist Jason Luss. Nice to see you this morning, Jason.
Hi, Clayton. Thanks for having me on.
Now, let me play devil's advocate for a moment, because what critics are saying is, look, you know, the FDA should step in and do this, because, look, that's the government's responsibility to protect citizens against toxic chemicals, and that's what trans fats are. What do you say?
Actually, the FDA already has done something when the evidence began to emerge that trans fats were pretty unhealthy and risky. The FDA required labeling, required food companies to add a label with the amount of trans fats. And what we've seen is, as a consequence of that label, is that food companies have already voluntarily cut back on the amount of trans fats, in part due to consumer pressures. And if you look at the data...
Oh, wait. At this rate, dude is never going to be invited back on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda because he's directly contravening what's already been said. Because he says that the sprinkle companies, you know, they're there on the New York Stock Exchange, the SPN or SPK or SKL, you know, that's Amalgamated Sprinkle of West Peoria. Gerald pointing out The Food Police. Now, there's a pure, non-biased opinion book. But no, the companies are already dealing with it. It wasn't a death knell to the sprinkle industry. By the way, can anybody tell me, I mean, because the front end of this clip was an out-and-out pay-on to sprinkles. What do sprinkles taste like? I mean, okay, so there's chocolate ones. And they taste like chocolate. But what do the rest of the... I mean, really? I mean, do they have a... Because I admit, I never get sprinkles. By the way, it was the caramel apples with the sprinkles on them that are part of the Listeria problem. Oh, for the sweet love of God. But no, sprinkles have never been, because for the life of me, what's the flavor in a sprinkle? You know, if you ask a three-year-old, the three-year-old who loves sprinkles will tell you, well, they're sprinkle-flavored. I guess.
Consumption of trans fats has fallen pretty dramatically as a response to those labels. So it's a little unclear now why they're coming in and adding this ban on top of a policy that was already effective.
Especially when there isn't, you know, ban. Especially when this is entirely just made up by people whose job... Do you suppose that the people who write for Fox are just quietly getting their frustrations out by moonlighting, writing for the Daily Leak or the Daily Current as some form of expiation by writing a barely discernible satire about right-wingers after spending all day writing stuff like this for goobers on Fox to read off the teleprompter?
What I was also saying to people is, look, you're just not responsible, right? You, if you think you can't eat one of these every day and you know that you're going to have some other kind of health issues, if you're eating donuts, that's your main part of your diet, you're probably going to have some issues. What the government is saying is, look, you're not responsible for your own health, so we're going to make sure we're going to step in and be responsible for you. Is that what they're saying?
You just said that's what they're saying. Why did you just? Why are you asking? Why are you asking, doofus? Doofus. Objection, Your Honor. Leading the witless. Carol pointing out there was an operative phrase in the guest's comment, due to consumer demand. The only people pissed about this are the goobers who watch Fox News. Oh, very good, Fox News. I like that. I like that a lot, Carol. Let's continue. Oh, dear God, let's continue. Let's get this over with.
Well, you know, there's a tendency to look at this kind of policy and say, hey, what's the big deal, you know, a ban on sprinkles on donuts? It's just not that big a deal. But
when they take your sprinkles, the next thing they're taking is your guns. And then they'll send you, once you don't have any sprinkles or guns with which to resist tyranny, they'll send you off to the FEMA re-education camp. And then if you're selling loose cigarettes over there underneath the guard tower in the southwest corner, they'll come and put a chokehold on you. Oh, wait, never mind, you're not black.
I think the way you want to look at that is to say that, you know, if the government can involve itself in such small minutia decisions of our daily lives as to whether we want to eat sprinkles or not, you know, that's really not much respect for the citizens' choices. And if they're willing to ban those small decisions, you know, what kind of respect will they give citizens in the larger decisions in lives?
Like donuts at all, maybe. Or guns! Michael and Madison pointing out the war on sprinkles. Damn, Bob. The dust and tinsel's barely settled from your annual war on sprinkles, and you're already coming for our you're already coming for our sprinkles? Oh, I know. I need a list of countries where Fox News is not broadcast. Or maybe are there any countries that just outright ban the transmission of Fox News into their country? Maybe I might want a vacation there. Yeah. No. Well, wait. Didn't Canada say that Fox News is not really news? Maybe a little respite in Vancouver would be nice. That's it. There we go. Carol was right on it. Canada. Fox is banned in Canada. It's against the law in Canada to lie on the air. Never been to Canada. Might be time to see it. Then again, I still like that idea from a few years back where Canada toyed with the idea of annexing the province of the Turks and Caicos Islands. There's a Canada I want to... Never mind. Stop with your anti... But hell, it's probably not even winter in Canada either. It's probably colder here. By God, here at the end of December, it's a toasty 68 degrees here in the studio. That's pretty good for late December, trust me. All right, Patriots. Enough of this shilly-shallying about. Let's get back to... Oh, okay. There's a rewrite there, courtesy of Michael and Madison. The dust has barely settled on your annual... Damn, Fox. The dust is and tinsel has barely settled from your annual war on Christmas, and you're already coming for our sprinkles? Yeah, exactly. I was guessing, but I didn't want to editorialize. Oh, no. Carol, with a correction. I was told by a fellow Canadian they were banned in Canada. Chat rumors say they are allowed in Canada. Ew. Just ew. Well, no wonder the Turks and Caicos don't want to be part of it then. Of course, you can probably get Fox and the Turks and Caicos, too. Had to go pick up my meds today. God knows you can. Fox can always be found in the waiting room of my local not a doctor's office. Maybe that's a resolution for the new year. I really am. I'm going to write that letter. Damn it. Include the photograph of the. Never mind. Let's not go down that road. Back to the war on sprinkles.
In our lives about where to work or where to live or some of the things that really matter to us.
Here are some other items that have small amounts of trans fats in them. Here, take a look at your screen. Some crackers, some frozen pizzas, popcorn, even coffee creamers, canned frosting.
Okay, everybody, let's just get past this real quick, okay? Back when I was a little kid and didn't drink coffee, just because my parents were strange this way, they didn't put milk in theirs. They used, because they were a modern, nuclear, futuristic family, or trying to be one, and this is why I drank Tang. Astronauts to the moon. No, they drank Coffee Mate. Now, later on, because my mother would become nutritionally aware, they dropped Coffee Mate like a hot rock. But even when before they dropped Coffee Mate like a hot rock, my parents would refer to, and particularly my father, they would refer to Coffee Mate simply as, and it's probably not as funny to y'all as it is to me, because I can hear his voice. You can't. They just referred to Coffee Mate as glue. One of his buddies from work had come over. You want a cup of coffee? Yeah, glue or no glue? What? And that stuff's obnoxious. And once they got away from it, they got away from it with a will. And would not, if they walked in and ordered coffee and would you like cream with it? My father got to, well, do you really serve half and half, or is it that glue? Well, I mean, it's non-dairy cream. Never mind, I won't have coffee. And I guess my father in life had a little bit of OCD, because he really did. He had a fabulous memory, and he would remember which chains would not serve you half and half with your coffee, and he never darkened their doorway again. So, really? Freedom's going to fall because America can't... You know, some America... Oh, dear God. What about the lactose intolerant, Bob? I guess. Canned frosting, Mandrake? Canned frosting? They're going to take away our canned frosting? What will young freshman girls away from home at college for the first time bond over at 2 o'clock in the morning, if not a shared container of canned frosting, Mandrake? I'm not trying to be sexist there. I mean, I'm just going by my daughters, even though they're not at college. Canned frosting was not safe in this house. Okay, back to it.
Decisions. You know, what kind of respect will they give citizens in the larger decisions in our lives about where to work or where to live or some of the things that really matter to us?
Here's some other items that have small amounts of...
Now, hold on a damn minute. We have agencies that protect workers. We have agencies that protect people from discriminatory hiring practices. We have agencies... And Republicans hate all of them. Oh, wait, that's already an assault on freedom, isn't it? I mean, after all, back when he was running for senator and one of his supporters was curb stomping somebody in Kentucky Stan. Rand Paul told Rachel Maddow, wasn't it, that the Congress should never have passed the Civil Rights Act because the free market would take care of companies that didn't want to accommodate people of color. You gotta come to a Fox News TV Radio Rwanda clip with your mind wide open and your Jedi powers cranked all the way to 11. Carol pointing out, I make my mashed potatoes in a cave. Yukon Gold potatoes, roasted garlic, cream cheese, real butter, and half and half. When Obama comes for my taters, that's where I draw the line. And he is, Carol Baker. He is coming for your spuds. That wife of his probably hectors him about all the butter and cream cheese in your mashed potatoes every night. And all other Americans that are eating butter and cream because Islamo-fascist, Muslim, Kenyan communism. That's why. Meanwhile, I think we kind of halfway lost Jay Cruz on trans fats. What? Repukes love trans fats. I don't get it. They like trans fats, transvaginal ultrasounds, transnational corporations, but no room in their heart for transsexuals. If they can't love all things trans, maybe they need to be transformed into transparent red mist. Ah! Now, Jay Cruz. Just kidding, right? Yes, right. Oh, dear God, really, Jeremy? Jeremy said, I heard a right-wing nut job the other day interviewed trying to pass off that Obama had Tom Clancy and Breitbart Kilt. Yeah, probably down to the MENA airport, right? Yeah.
Trans fats in them. Here, take a look at your screen. Some crackers, some frozen pizzas, popcorn, even coffee creamers, canned frosting. If you're making some cookies once a year with your kids on the holidays, that'll be banned. Though I remember when I worked...
What the... He just made that part up, didn't he? Well, wait, he's making the whole thing up. But he just, if you're making some cookies once. Really? So I guess we know a little bit. I don't even know who this doofus is. But I guess we just found out a little bit about his upbringing. His mommy wouldn't even make real frosting for the Christmas cookies. Not very American, was she? Oh, maybe she was one of those working three jobs kind of unique Americans. Uh-oh, we've started something. Carol, you've started something. Ron and Raleigh, you can only have taters like Yukon Golds. You can't no. No waxy taters like Yukon Golds. Only good old American russets, by God. Preferably from Dixie, Idaho. Yes, indeed. Jack in Shreveport, I'm assuming that the usage of sprinkles in the Fox discussion was generated internally at Fox, and that there was no article somewhere that used sprinkles as an example. Is that true? If so, it's typical of Fox to pick some absurdly silly example to use for ridicule. No, they were picking this up off of Light Fart, apparently. Tim from L.A. pointing out sprinkles are patriotic. Even Thomas Jefferson said, the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with sprinkles of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure, of course. Yeah. Now, dang it. See, the fight has already started. Carol responding to Ron and Raleigh. The Yukon is in Palin country. That's American, goddammit. Yes. Oh, for the love of... Let's finish this up.
To Good Day Philadelphia in Philadelphia. And there, the city was going through a big ban on trans fats. But the bakers came in front of the judges and said, look, we can't make our food without trans fat. It will not, the texture, it will fall apart. Taste the difference. And they handed different pastries to the judge, and the judges agreed. This tastes like garbage without this trans fat. People are.
So is this a historical digression now that before, because see, trans fats didn't really exist. Trans fats are a creature. Aren't they? of the industrialization of food? I mean, I know there's, what, saturated fats, monounsaturated, polyunsaturated. So nobody ever ate a decent donut before the invention of trans fats. Okay.
Aren't eating these pastries every day, and you know what? They made an exception. So can't the government have some common sense here?
You would think so. I mean, I actually asked, I have two kids of my own, and I mentioned this policy to them last night. I take them occasionally for a treat for donuts, and I said, what would you think if sprinkles were banned because they had trans fat? So one of my sons said, well, that's just dumb. And the other one...
Yeah, it just kind of describes the entire segment, doesn't it?
The other one said, there's just such small amount there. How could that be harmful? And I think, you know, when we've reached the point that even our children recognize sort of the lunacy of a policy directed at such small amounts, right. I think that's when we know we've gone too far.
Maybe we should have the kids running government.
We did. It was called the Reign of Error. We had the world's biggest 7-year-old running the government. And the schoolyard bully telling him what to do. Well, look, I didn't mean to, but I did. I have now filibustered my way through the entire first half of the program. We'll have that from time to time, especially when you have to make sure that the patriots out there are all well informed and warned in advance of the coming war on sprinkles. Yeah. So we will take a little break. And by the way, thank you very kindly to Darlene. Darlene just finished off tonight's fundraising. If we could, thank you so much, Darlene. If we could maybe take a run at finishing 2014 to the good, it'd be wonderful. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back after a break. You know how to reach the program, right? 304-574-8178, 304-663-HORN. Pick one. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Come on.
I just love the guitar work in that. Lindsey Buckingham, Trouble. It is 29 minutes before the hour. We are indeed halfway through this Titanic Tuesday edition of The Horn. The last Titanic Tuesday for 2014. And we have had some dandy Titanic Tuesdays, haven't we? Yes, we have. Let's see. As I mentioned earlier, lines are open if you want to get involved in the conversation. Either 304-574-8178, that's one of the two lines, or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Either one works just fine. And Skype to Skype is, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Also, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. That's where I found out from Isaac that the very spit spraying Scotsman I was doing, he said, that was Fat Bastard. Well, not intentionally, it wasn't. It just comes out that way. I was going for Mel Gibson. I know, big fail. At Bob Kincaid on Twitter, Bob Kincaid on Facebook, and if you'd like to join up, because you got a request and everything, join up with the Head On Radio Network group page at Facebook as well. Head On Radio Network Horn. Jump right in, either way. And yes, we've got a dandy good group going in the chat room tonight. Ron has joined us. Kelly has joined us. Jay Cruzen has joined us. Dwayne is there. Hey, Dwayne. Let's go to the Gizmo line. I suspect we have Bill. Hey, Bill.
Say you don't go on King Kane's Mountain. You'll sit and talk for the rest of your life. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Okay, you ever hear that song originally?
No.
Wolverton Mountain?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A guy was with a gun and a knife. That's the kind of guy I think I'd stay away from. I don't know. What kind of guy? You don't have that kind of reputation.
No.
Oh, well, you can verbally slice up right wingers, which is nice. I appreciate that. Is it verbally or orally? I don't know. Again, you had some English background, didn't you?
Yes, I do, but I think it's a question. I think it's a question of intent.
Okay.
That's a joke.
Verbally
or orally?
Well, my English was decent, but I don't know if you guys had any diagram sentences in your youth.
Oh yeah. In fact, I was going through some old family papers the other day, and I found in my own grandmother's hand a sentence that she had diagrammed. And it looked like a physics equation.
Yeah, that's the way things were taught. I don't know what they're teaching anymore today. I have a good friend who is a retired high school history teacher, and I met him on a gig one night, and the guy I was working with said, "Hey, you should go talk to Bill." So we sat down. To this day, we can still kill an hour on the phone. There are so many things that keep coming up that we never knew a thing about. Billy, I hide these things so well, Bob. The fact that the Germans and the American fleet had a standoff in the Pacific because the Germans wanted to get their hands on the Philippine Islands so they could stick one of their many archdukes or whatever the hell they called them, fallen arches, I don't know what the hell they were. The Germans were still grabbing colonies, after 1890, and that's, I've always had a theory that the country that that came into the scene of power in the 1890s could be the biggest troublemakers, you know? Anyway, that's my story. But, yeah, I won't keep you, but I just had to sneak that song. And I had another one, too, that, Bobby, was it Bobby Bear who did Detroit City? Detroit City.
I'm honest to God. You may be. I think you've evaded me. You stumped the chump.
Well, I don't know for sure if that's the case. If somebody can look it up. I can't. I'm still running this old computer, and anyway, with my vision, it's tough to get on the internet and look for something. The last few days, I was trying to find the name of the Washington Nasties quarterback who was 5'8" and about 168, a little Eddie LeBaron. Yeah, he was decent. He actually laid out some decent records as a passer. That game baseball was knocked out of my life in '54 when the Indians lost the series in four straight games, and Willie Mays made a catch to this day, which is, when you see it on tape, it's like, how the hell did he do that? And that's how stupid white men can be. I'm not talking about decent or anything. It's just, how stupid were they, Bob?
Wait. I think you're using, since we started out talking about English, you might be using the wrong verb tense there.
Oh, yeah?
Not were, are.
Are, yes.
I mean,
they still are, I guess, but to deny a place in the annals of baseball to people like Satchel Paige and Cool Papa Bell and a few others is like, are you kidding me? To do this, to that was a, well, in fact, Satchel Paige and Dizzy Dean used to recruit teams, one black team, one white team, and they would freelance all over the country playing and drawing in big crowds. Because, you know, those men were horribly underpaid in their day. So, it's like everything else in this world here. If you don't, because the kind of money that they generated was not coming back to them, you know. Well, anyway, I gotta let you go. I gotta call a friend of mine. She usually makes me a cake for my birthday, and it's a St. Gall's Kuchen, it's called.
St. Who's?
St. Gall's Kuchen.
No,
there's a vegetarian restaurant on Coventry.
Wait, St. Gall?
Yeah.
As in all Gaul is divided into three parts?
G-A-U-L.
Yeah, that's the guy. I didn't even know there was a St. Gall, but I bet you St. Gall's Kuchen is darn fine.
Well, it's just got that moist in the middle, you know, like, do you ever have a rum cake?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And you know, Bob, try to go out and find a place that sells real chocolate anymore.
The
stuff that comes in a candy bar form, I don't know about that stuff. Well, I think in your home, somebody still knows how to make fudge. Huh?
Oh, I've got a fabulous fudge recipe.
I figured that, you know. See, that's the thing about you and me, we're not... We're sure not sexist because we try to cook up a storm too. You know, I always was good at certain things. Now, homemade potato pancakes, the recipe of my Germanic grandmother. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they call them latkes.
Yeah.
And was latkes not Jewish? What's the word I'm looking for? The language.
Yiddish. Yeah, it's a latke in Yiddish. Auf Deutsch, it's Kartoffelpfannkuchen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a direct translation, potato pancake.
Okay. I used to have to grate the potatoes when I was, you know, 12 years old, 13. Oh, my fingers. You know, I guess you get a little fresh meat in with the potatoes now and then, you know. Anyway, I will let
hey,
you
did
go
you hear
what,
hey, did, wait, wait, wait. Did you hear about the butcher who backed into his grinder?
Yeah, he got behind in
he
his
got
work.
Behind in his work. Wait.
Yes. Well, how about the guy who backed into the eyeglass maker, backed into a device that made a spectacle of himself?
I'll
let you go.
All right. We'll probably,
good night.
I trust we'll probably hear from you tomorrow night, Bill.
I sure hope so.
So we'll hold off the official happy birthday wishes until then.
Boy, thank you.
All right.
Take care.
All right.
Good
see
night.
You, Bill. Bye now. Oh God, I'd love to have seen Bill work a crowd in his prime. That man has a wonderland storehouse of one-liners. Let's go back to the other line, the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676 is now open. And let's see who's on the other one. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
Yeah, man, that was, well, I'm glad to hear you got that little contribution and everything set up. You did, I emailed you back with my address, so I guess you
and it will be, it will, and yes, your Pullmans will be on the way.
Well, I am kind of a nut freak.
I think you will be even more so when you get your taste buds around this, because these things, oh my God, these things are so good.
Going back to what you were talking about earlier, the whole thing about the South and the good old days, it just really makes me sick. And even for the whites who were down here, unless you were one, this might sound familiar, unless you were part of the 1%, things weren't really that good for you. You know, you had it a little bit better than the blacks, the African Americans, but you know, it is so blatantly unfair and biased. I mean, that's so obvious to me, and yet people seem to think that those are the good old days. Like I said, I've got people in my family who still kind of go back to older people. The 40s, 30s, and not really the 30s. I don't think too many of them are around. But they kind of look at those as the good old days, and I'm almost tempted to ask them. I guess.
Yeah, define good.
Bad. Huh?
Define good.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like, if you weren't a slave owner, which most people weren't, because from what I understand, slaves were kind of expensive. You know, you had to feed them and stuff, and in order to have them work. Yeah, you know, so that's, never mind the inhumanity you're doing to them, just some, the economics of it. But it's just so preposterous.
Well, that's like having people say, and I've heard it a million times, we were poor, but we didn't know we were poor. I heard my mother one time hearing that saying, well, you know what? We were, and we knew it.
Yeah.
We knew it because we had one pair of shoes to last us a year. We knew it because, she said, I wore the same clothing to school every day, and I made that in home ec.
Yeah, and it seems like we're going back to that, where they're slowly getting society even used to that, trying to take away, they're trying to get away with any social programs and all that. And a large segment of the people who really benefit from it that seem to be clueless, they're just buying it hook, line, and sinker,
Yeah. And the reason, and I come back to this thesis that I've worked for a number of years now, Jim, I think the reason that the right wing have been so successful in plundering and pillaging through everything that we have stored up for the working class via progressive politics, the reason they've been so good at plundering all of that is because the generation that mostly built it is gone. And so,
exactly.
Really, there's nobody who remembers now what, you know, what depression-level poverty was like. And as bad as the Great Recession of 2008 and 9 and 10 and 11 and 12 was and has been, it is not on a level with that.
Yeah. Well, it's like Tom Hart, and, you know, he had a book he referenced a lot, and it's the four turnings, and basically it has to do with, like, it divides generations into, you know, basically around 20-year periods. I don't forget the name there. But anyway, it shows how, you know, one generation is really, you know, goes through something like the Great Depression. The next generation, they remember the Great Depression, so they work harder. They enact laws and whatnot, and to try and rectify the situation. The next generation does a little bit more of the same, and then the fourth generation kind of just forgets everything the previous generations learned, and just goes back to doing the same goddamn thing, which it seems like we're doing, you know?
Yeah. And of course, you know, let's bear in mind that nostalgia always plays a part.
Yeah.
But that golden glow is never quite as golden when you're in the moment of it. It's a lot more brassy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's just like those idiots on Fox talking about deregulation, and you don't have to really regulate, and companies will learn. All they do is just declare bankruptcy and form another company. The people are screwed. Of course, for the vast majority of people seem not to be aware of that. You know, and then that just infuriates me. Maybe it's just because I'm keen on history, and I just remember that stuff. It just comes automatically to me. Whereas most people are just clueless, you know, or they seem to be. I haven't quizzed them all.
Well, I have to ask you. I mean, I know you keep up with stuff down there in your native Louisiana stand, Jim. How are people responding to the whole Steve Scalise going and having a cup of coffee with the Klan story?
I tell you the truth, I really don't pay that much attention to local media that much. I heard a little bit about it. And it seemed, because I happened to see a little bit of the local news, and they were, it seemed like they were doing diligence as far as local media is concerned. But now, to me, local media, I don't know if it's like this nationwide, and I think it is. It's more just to promote goods and services and don't focus too much on the negative, you know? I mean, do you notice that?
Yeah.
Except for maybe an occasional, like that big, the water thing up around your area. Don't think the water, if the corporation's not really responsible with so many words. Basically, what I bet was the local slant on things. I'll wear things back fine and dandy in a relatively short while. This is the cost of progress. Some sort of slant like that.
Right. Well, in my particular county here, we now have a dubious distinction. My county has the highest leukemia rate of any county in West Virginia now.
Mm.
And among other things, there's a little 13-minute film out. It was sponsored in part by my friends over at the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition. And it details this frack waste injection site that has become just an environmental toxic disaster.
Yeah, well, don't they realize that that's just the cost of freedom?
I guess we're all just supposed to whistle count the cost of freedom all the way to the grave.
It's just like that bit about that last bit you talked about.
Because, pumping that toxic waste into the ground, that was a good energy independence job, Jim. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just like that trans fats story, Fox News is trying to poke fun at. Yeah, a little bit of it's not going to kill you. But, if you carry that conclusion, okay, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, go to the extreme. What about a little bit of mercury? That would pretty much kill you, right, if you swallowed mercury?
Hey, look, we're coming up on the first anniversary of the poisoning of 300,000 people in the state, in just 9 counties in the state of West Virginia, Jim. That was a little bit of methylchlorohexane methanol. In fact, it turns out it's not safe at 1 part per million. I mean, I think 1 part per million qualifies, does it not, as a real little bit?
Yeah. It's like another example. I thought it was like radioactive, some sort of radioactive, something from a nuclear reactor. I mean, you wouldn't want to go hang out and drink or consume any of some of that lovely substances in Fukushima, much less even be around there.
Yeah.
I saw
a really fascinating graphic depiction of the outflow from Fukushima just earlier today, and it was like, because it looked like the main island there was just sort of bleeding into the Pacific Ocean.
Oh yeah,
because it is.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's disparaging when you see all that, and it doesn't seem to really get the coverage that it should.
But, well, we're only hillbillies, right?
Yeah. Well, we're just Cajuns, so
right.
We're in the same boat.
Right. You've got two groups of people who arguably have been, as Europeans go, on this continent for just about longer than putting near anybody else. And,
yeah.
You know, so what if you poison a few? I mean, you know, there's lots of us.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll let you go. I'll let you get some other callers get through there.
All right, Jim. Well, keep an eye on your mailbox. And, of course, we will expect or we would at least appreciate a report when your Pullmans arrive.
You'll definitely have that.
Because if you're into almonds and pecans and pistachios and whatnot, I think you're going to find these to be crunchy and delicious.
No, I really am. I've been getting into. I just know they're a good source of.
There's a lot of protein there, and
protein, vitamins,
and the good fats, and a nice little fiber.
Yeah. Oh, I can open up a can of like those almonds and they have the different flavored ones, wasabi, blue diamond, diamond. I can easily.
I have become spoiled for pistachios on the ones that Sparky has been offering up as premiums and sending along. Oh my God, those things are good.
I got some of those, and I bought some pistachios the other day, and I didn't eat the whole bag, so I'm getting better. I have to cut myself off. All right, Bob, I'll let somebody.
All right, Jim, have a good evening. Good to talk to you. Bye now. 5 minutes before the hour, both lines open. Either one is just dandy. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-4676. Horn, H-O-R-N. Jump into the conversation. Jeremy pointing out some happy news. Our nuclear power plant, Vermont Yankee, powered down for the last time yesterday, but the company that owns it has 60 years to decommission it. And we'll probably need every blessed second of it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Jim.
Pursuant to your opening thing about the thing the Republicans had to say, which was a joke or whatever, their own type of joke.
Well, poor satire, I think, at the very least.
One thing, you know. Number one, people don't eat from year to year. They don't eat from month to month.
Nope.
They don't eat from week to week. They eat from day to day.
They do indeed.
And as far as this program is concerned, I ask you, which would be best? Should they cut it off all at once? Just end it? And suffer the repercussions thereof? Or should they kill it by exsanguination?
It just depends. Jim, it depends on what kind of Republican you are. If you're a moderate Republican, you're going to kill it a little bit at a time so that you can slowly wean your constituents in the grocery industry off of it. If you're a God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding Tea Party patriot, you want to kill it all at once because people are laying there in their government dependence hammocks eating all that food for a dollar a day. And that's destroying liberty and freedom.
Well, I think the reaction from the first alternative would be extremely hurtful.
Well, and that, in point of fact, is the road we are presently going down. Remember, the Farm Bill absolutely gutted the SNAP program. And it was done, as I noted, with the participation of some quisling Democrats.
Well, I think if they should pursue the former course, they will find that extremely inimical to their own interests.
Well, they did it. They did it before the election, and they paid no price whatsoever. Because among other things, Jim, and I think it's a sad commentary on the status of what passes for our republic. But mostly the poor don't go vote. The hungry don't go vote. And they haven't much in the way of lobbyists on K Street now, do they?
No, they don't. But I think that if, in fact, they were just cut it off altogether and the grocery stores would lose all the benefits they're getting from it, the reaction would be much more positive to reverse those policies. That's just my position.
No, I understand it, but
I don't like that at all. I mean, you know, because I believe these people when they have their own little jokes and stuff like that, they begin to say, well, we're going to do this, that, and the other, and it's some sort of, you know, whatever you call it. I can't remember the term. But nonetheless, I believe them. And I've been taught all my life, when somebody tells me something, no matter how draconian it can be, I believe them.
Well, and
the reason I believe them, reason I believe them is because I remember a man back in 1930 who said what he was going to do. And people laughed at him. Oh, no, he's not going to do that. 10 years later, in 1940, at the height of his power, he said, now who's laughing now? And that's the axiom upon which I have always operated my entire life. When someone tells me something, no matter how crazy it is, or how bizarre, or inhumane it is, I believe them at their word.
As do I, and I have, we have modern history to go with too. Because do you remember Newt Gingrich's Contract on America?
Very well.
Well, he was talking about 99% of that of every crazy thing that was in the Contract on America back when he was just. I remember when he was a backbench lunatic from Gwinnett County, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And he was deadly in earnest about every last bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when something like killing food stamps begins to get traction in the sort of deep in the swamps of the right wing, eventually it'll find its way out onto the flat, level, and dry ground of the Republican Party. I mean, how many of the incoming freshman senators that will make up the swing over to a Republican majority in the 114th Congress, how many of those are sure enough Tea Partiers? I mean, Joni Ernst is the second coming of Sarah Palin. She really, really is. I know Aaron, who writes the Poking at Snakes blog, who wrote Farewell Michelle a couple of nights ago, or last night published it. I know she's got to be grieving because Michelle Bachman is gone from the Congress, but I don't think she'll have long to suffer because Joni Ernst is going to keep her busy.
Oh, well, Joni Ernst is not exactly as laughable as Sarah Palin. I mean, you know, if it weren't for Sarah Palin.
Well, right, and see, that's the thing.
You know who would have won that election? I mean, if what's-his-face had already had somebody who was at least quiet and not as stupid as that idiot was, the Godzilla from Wasilla.
Yeah.
The election may have turned exactly around.
Well, exactly. And see, Michelle Bachman, for instance, was just a member of the House of Representatives, of which there are, what, 435?
435, yeah.
And so she can easily get lost in the crowd. But Joni Ernst is going to be a member of the most exclusive, the exclusive country club on the planet.
My point. And she doesn't have the baggage that Sarah Palin has, having, you know, cut off her term as governor of Alaska.
Right, and what's more, she's a veteran, so she's got a bloody shirt she can wave.
Absolutely. She's much more effective than Sarah Palin could be. That's for damn sure. Absolutely. And so they're well organized, and they are well cemented for the time being. But, you know, if they should do something as dangerous as that, it might galvanize people on the other side to realize exactly what these people are doing. And to realize, for more reasons than one, and not just for humane reasons, for economic reasons, hey, this program is beneficial as well as humane. That's just my point. I don't want us to get cut off at all. No, I don't want that. But if you take something out gradually, people sort of begin to feel it. Not so much.
Well, it's the frog in the boil. It's the frog in the warm water, right?
Exactly. You know, you can put him in there and turn it up gradually, or you can just throw him in there all at once. And he'll probably survive if he hits it all at once. He jumps out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. You've got some strange things that are going on up there, and I'm sure they are.
Well, I mean, look, they've said that Mitch McConnell said a couple of weeks ago or less that the very firstest thing they're going to take up, Jim, is going to be making sure that the Keystone XL pipeline gets built.
Well, that's great, but it's not going through any of their property.
And it's not going to poison their water.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I mean, it's just amazing how selfish these people can be. And it's not going to hurt them, you know, as far as their personal health is concerned, or the value of their own property. They'll run that thing through, and, you know, it's just, as far as I'm concerned, a total monstrosity of having these heat pumps that...
And
get this sludge through there. It's, the whole thing is just absolutely crazy. And you've got these people here who believe that it's going to benefit us, and it's going to make our gas prices go down, and we're just going to just have a wonderful energy lack of dependence.
And yet, in the meantime, they're going to... And here's the fun part about all this. They've got to be able to hold out until oil gets back above $70 a barrel.
Right.
Right now, it's hovering around 50. It went up a little bit with that refinery fire in Libya in the last couple of days. That was 800,000 barrels they burned up. But the Saudis have said repeatedly that they are willing to let it go as far as $20 a barrel in order specifically to destroy the extreme extraction industries and make us continue to be dependent upon them.
Well, that's a great thing for the Saudis because, I mean, you know, basically oil is their main source of revenue, and they're each and every Saudi citizen, how much should they receive from the government as some sort of stipend?
That's what keeps the Royal House of Ibn Saud on the Royal House of Ibn Saud's throne.
I'd say it's around at least $35,000 a year. I mean, 10 years ago it was 23. Now it's probably 35, I guess. I don't know, adjusted for inflation.
And here's the most fascinating point, out of that, Jim. The Saudis can absorb, you know, losses down to $20 a barrel because, you know what, their production, and this really tells you something about the world market and the world hunger for oil. Do you know what their production costs are on a per barrel basis in Saudi Arabia?
Mm-mm.
$4.50 to $5.50 a barrel.
Well, I meant tremendous in the exact opposite. I mean, it's tremendously low. Absolutely. You got it. But, I mean, these people who are coming into the Congress next year, it's going to be a real helter-skelter. And, you know, when you look at people like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and the leadership of the Democratic Party, Dianne Feinstein, you know, I just wonder about these people. I mean, how long can they last? How long have they been there?
Well,
in my opinion, they're no better than the people who are on the opposing side of the aisle. They're, you know, they just basically make these statements and, you know, oh, yes, this, that, and the other. And their opponents just laugh at them.
Well, because they don't fight it as blood sport the way their opponents do.
Exactly. They don't. I mean, because, number one, Pelosi and, of course, Harry Reid and others, they're on their way out. They can't last that much longer. I mean, their political careers are at an end. They've done what they're going to do. They did what they did. And they will say they tried what they tried to do. And then, bye.
And of course, add into it the fact that they are multi-millionaires.
That's what I said. They're all millionaires. I mean, you know, basically they're up there. And I guess it's a nice avocation for them. It's not even a profession, in my opinion.
Well, but remember, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac.
Yeah, but they don't have any power. They're laughing stocks.
No, I mean, when the Democrats had the House, the Pelosi House tried to get some things done, and crap died in the Senate. And that had to do with the fact that, you know, Harry Reid let the minority run the show over there, Mitch McConnell.
Well, that's true. Now, I'm not trying to be too hard on this.
No. I know, but your point is well taken. On the other hand, look at what the Tea Party's done. The Tea Party
they've grown exponentially.
And they've fielded a slate of candidates, and right after this election, you know, everybody was saying, well, you know, this is the resurgence of reasonable Republicans. Horse feathers, Jim. Horse feathers. Because the lunatics are still in charge of the asylum. And they're not, not going to slow down. And I'm still, they say that the Keystone XL is going to be their first order of business, but there's still a little bit of the gambler in me who says that, if I had a fin laying around that I wasn't doing anything with, I would sure put that $5 bill on the Republican Party the Republican House, I should say, to impeach.
Yeah, that's definitely on the table, because they had 2 years to deal with him almost into the day regarding
and the degree to which the Republicans, and especially the teabagging segment of that party, they don't dislike the President of the United States, Jim. They don't oppose him as a loyal opposition would oppose. They hate him. They hate him with the heat of a million suns, Jim.
Oh, I know. Last night I had a conversation with, no, two nights ago, I had a conversation with this woman who is a staunch Roman Catholic and extremely conservative, and she thinks because she goes to Mass every day, and she thinks because she might go to a nursing home and move a bingo card to some woman who is a paraplegic. And I started to ask her, I said, when you go to that place, do you wash her ass?
Yeah.
Do you help her get up and go to the bathroom?
Well, if she is...
Or do you go there and do this bingo card thing? Is that your, is that your faith? And that is
right.
Your,
if that's your manifestation of Matthew 25, you got more work to do.
Well, that's why. Well, exactly what I told her, and then she brought in the thing, and we had had this arrangement for a while back. I said, "You will not mention to me on this phone two names. You will not mention Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, or else we have nothing else to say. Because I'm not going to listen to your hate, I'm not going to listen to your prejudice, and I'm not going to listen to your rote stupidity."
Well, I tell you what, Jim. If she is staunchly and devotedly Roman Catholic, her little old head's liable to explode here in a couple of months, because Pope Francis is getting ready to shake things up a mite.
Well, I tried to extol the virtues of the current pontiff to her. I mean, I've always been very respectful, because I'm very much almost Roman Catholic myself, except once removed by the virtue of Henry VIII.
Right.
But nonetheless, I've always tried to be respectful and to be understanding and to appreciate faith and things of that nature. And, if that's what you believe, that that's a wonderful thing, you believe it. Just because we don't believe the same things doesn't mean we can't be amicable and be friends. But, I mean, when you really get down through the skin and the integument, and you get down to the bare bones of some of these people, you will find just what you said. Nothing but a lot of hatred and this, that, and the other. And her words were to me was, I certainly hope nothing happens to this president. And when I deal with people like that, I know they are speaking antonymically.
That's when the mob boss comes by and says, "Yeah, it's a nice plate glass window you got there. It'd be a pity if something happened to it."
Mm-hmm. You got it. And
be watching, Jim, because what he's about to say about climate change is probably gonna make the vast majority of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops' heads explode. It's gonna drive Bill O'Reilly right around the bend.
Well, I think this Pope is a good man.
I do too, and I wish him long life.
I do.
I wish for him, among other things, time enough to get rid of a lot of the old reactionary right wingers that John Paul II put in there, and let's see what happens.
Exactly, but I wonder what happened to John Paul I. I mean, he had no problems with coronary in his history.
No.
I just wonder. And, you know, I fear for the current Congress.
A lot of people do. And the lecture that he gave to the Cardinals, that was a heck of a Christmas gift.
Well, basically, he said the old one's out and the new one's in, among other things, about, you know, the Vatican Bank and this, that, and the other, and the importance of people and feeling being more important than money and power and the ability to frighten people into the ranks of the faithful.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Jim, it is good to hear from you, and I hope you have a very happy new year.
And the same to you. Do you have any special programs for tomorrow night, or are you going to go on to Mike Malloy after you?
We'll go. Well, Malloy's going to be live, so we won't do anything in that regard. We won't go past 9 p.m., but we'll have a front porch. We'll have a front porch edition from 7 to 9.
Well, that'll be good. That'll be good. At least you'll have some input for the new year.
And then come Thursday morning, I'll be up and working on my Hoppin' John and my greens and who knows, maybe a little corned beef.
Well, that sounds very good. That sounds very good. Absolutely. Well, you know, you and I don't always agree on things, but nonetheless, this is one thing we do agree on. Number one, the SNAP program. And number two, the current direction of the Holy See.
Yep, indeed, indeed. Jim, take care and have a very good night.
Likewise.
All right.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. And let's keep things going. I believe, we'll stay in West Virginia a bit. I think we got Gerald here. Hey, Gerald.
Hey, Bob.
How in the world are you?
I'm here, buddy. I'm here.
Setting them up and knocking them down, right?
Well, no, not tonight, no.
Well, what's going on?
Oh, I don't know. You tell me. We've went around the world this evening.
Well, we do that. We do that.
Okay. How about this?
Right.
What sparked it was the poisoning of 300,000 people, myself being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Did you happen to catch the Gazette today? Gary Southern, the former president of Freedom Industries.
Right.
And with a name like Freedom Industries, how could they do any wrong?
Right. That's why I refer to it now as the Freedom Disaster, Gerald.
Right. Well, Mr. Southern, who is under indictment for violations of the Clean Water Act and several other things, doesn't think that his home in Florida and his Bentley car are up for grabs.
Wait, not the Bentley.
Yeah, the Bentley. The feds are going after his Bentley. Can you believe that? It's an overreaching Obama administration.
Well, and I thought the other thing you were going to reference or point out was he and at least one of the other freedom defendants is they're both moving the court to throw U.S. District Attorney. Booth Goodwin.
Yeah, Booth Goodwin. Yeah.
Plum off the case.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see how that pans out. That'll be interesting to watch.
And that's Denny Farrell and Gary Southern want Booth Goodwin just completely removed from the case. I don't know because
he's not Republican enough.
I'm trying to find. Let's see. The conflict of interest is real. The U.S. attorney,
right.
His assistants, investigators, and office staff were actual victims of the crimes charged against Mr. Farrell. In other words, my client poisoned the U.S. attorney, so the U.S. attorney shouldn't be able to prosecute. Damn shame we didn't kill him. Right?
Right. Right. I don't know if people... We take things for granted in this country. That was kind of what my call was about. You don't think about... When you go in a room, you flip the light switch on, the lights are on. All because of coal, mind you, right?
Of course.
Okay, we're straight there. You go to the faucet to get a drink of water. You don't think about methylcyclohexane methanol in it, you know, a cold cleaning agent that could kill you. But anyway, my point is, I don't want to digress. I lived through that, and I can tell you it's really sobering when you go, when you have these luxuries that a lot of people in other countries don't have, and you know, you can't use them. I have water here in my house, but I can't use it. Can't wash dishes, can't wash clothes, can't take a bath.
Right.
Because the smell was terrible.
And it turns out the fumes were terrible for you.
Yes, yes, exactly. But, you know, our great government here in West Virginia took care of the people now, didn't they?
No.
No. No? What? What do you mean, Bob?
Well, see, I don't know if you were listening that night or not, but the night that we went over the Blue Ribbon Committee's recommendations coming out of the Freedom disaster, and they cited the testimony given by the head of West Virginia American Water. Well, we couldn't have turned the water off because that would have cost us a lot of money, and what if something caught fire?
Well, true. But I can't really comment too much there because I have a little inside information on that. But another reason that they're not telling about that, and I don't work for the water company or anything, but I know people that work there and I'm close to people that work there.
Sure.
And I'm closer to it than you think. But anyway, we won't get into that.
I'm not going to delve.
Well, it's nothing bad coming up because I'm not going to say anything bad on either side because I don't know. I'm not a water treatment plant operator or a CEO of the West Virginia American Water. However, I do know from other sources around the state that one of the reasons they didn't shut down is there are like 125 tank sites in the Kanawha Valley. Most people don't know this, and I don't know how many boosters there are. If they were to shut down, it would take like a month to fill those tanks back up. And
we would have had to have the aqueous version of a Berlin airlift for a month into Charleston.
Right. And they pump like 30 million gallons a day down there. So to kind of put that into perspective. A lot of people don't know that, and I don't know that. I don't know what the water company has released on all that, but those are just things that are pretty common.
And there are things that are available in the public domain, like for instance the fact that 15%, and this I found this fascinating when I first read it, and it's worth going back over since instead of treating this as like a year end retrospective. This is more or less still going on because, you know what, of those 300,000 poisoned people, Gerald, I'm sure there are people who still have nightmares. I'm sure that there are people who still don't fully trust the water coming out of their taps. Because
one of them is my mother. To this even almost a year later, she doesn't drink it, doesn't wash her dishes in it, just started washing her clothes in it. Of course, she goes up north and has a boyfriend up north, you know, that draws water from another source. She has been hauling water from Grafton to Charleston every week to drink.
And I don't blame her.
I don't blame her. No, I don't blame her.
Because this is really before you joined the conversation, but the questions we were asking a year ago, Gerald, were, for instance, based on people like Ben Stout, who went down and started looking at people's water heaters and so forth. You know, he's a water biologist. He's a PhD. He's the real deal from up in Wheeling, Wheeling College, Wheeling Jesuit. You have to call it Jesuit.
Right.
But you know, he was talking about the adhesive properties of this chemical. And
yeah,
you know, one night we just ran some rough numbers. And we got into some real walking around money pretty darn quick, Gerald, if you started thinking about every house in the valley having to replumb its house, every structure, every church, every business, every school, every everything. And this is where I was going a couple of minutes ago, I didn't know that the acceptable water loss rate for a water utility in this state is 15%. That is, for every 100 gallons they pump, it's okay if 15 gallons they just can't account for.
And in the Kanawha Valley, they're like 40%.
The water loss rate, the last available numbers for water loss with West Virginia American Water is in excess of 30%. So that means, I think we can extrapolate, that means that 30% of that lost water is just somewhere. 30%
of
that
going in the ground.
Yeah, 30% of that poisoned water is just in the ground somewhere.
Well, you know, that's been my question all along. They say, well, you know, flush for an hour or 15 minutes and then flush this and that. You know, they gave us all the instructions on how to flush our lines, which didn't do a damn thing because it still smelled like chemical for months later. But here's my question. Now, I'm on a public sewer system. My sanitary sewer goes to a treatment plant, which happens to be upstream of the intake of the Kanawha Valley treatment plant.
God almighty.
That was my question. Now, several miles upstream, I might add, 5, 6 maybe. But my question is, okay, if we're flushing all this water, what's happening to this chemical when it goes down the drain? I mean, the sewer plants obviously can't treat it, remove that chemical. I mean, they're probably not even trying to.
And the real not even trying that's going on, Gerald, is state government or West Virginia American Water Company even trying to answer those questions. See, I'm because let's be clear, I'm not in the affected area. I'm not. My water was off at the same time because all the mains had frozen and burst.
Right.
Under it, it was off for a different reason. But anyway, my focus is on septic systems. Because when they were putting all that flushing information out there about how you're supposed to be able to flush your pipes, and Jay Cruzen points out via chat, he says, not to mention the people with the chemical still bonded to their pipes and slowly breaking loose a molecule at a time, because that's real. That's really happening in the homes of 300 and businesses and churches and schools of 300,000 people. It's happening in the state capitol. It's happening in the courthouse. It's happening in the governor's mansion. It's happening everywhere. It's happening at Shelley Moore's house, who laughed about this, by the way, and I will never forgive her for that. She thought it was funny.
You know, that was one of the other points I wanted to make about this whole disaster. You know, someone had said, I read somewhere on a blog or something, that, you know, it wasn't, this time it didn't just affect the Poors or the Blighs or whatever. It affected everybody. I mean, if you lived in this area, you were affected. Don't give a damn who you were. I mean, the governor's mansion was contaminated, you know, all the way up to the top. I thought, at the very least, since, you know, so many people were inconvenienced with it, because that's basically what it really is to begin with, until you get to thinking about it. But anyway, I thought, out of all of this, surely something will be done. Surely there will be some kind of safeguards put in place. Because basically, Freedom Industries wasn't really even regulated. I mean, nobody gave a damn because the tanks were above ground.
No, of course not. And we had the story maybe it was Friday after Christmas, the story of my friend Maria Gano, whose water all of a sudden for 3 days on end started running looking like milk.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
and the boys from DEP said,
there's nothing there.
We can't find it. We went up and looked at the pond, and the pond's fine. And, you know, there was Maria saying everybody with a pulse knows that there's two ponds up there, but, of course, they only looked at one. Some of this is just life in West Virginia. But where I was going back to a couple of minutes ago is the fact that, whether it's really... If this was anywhere but Appalachia, if this had happened to the affluent and not an entire community, we'd be talking about some sort of emergency spending bill to allow our betters to completely replumb their houses. And we'd be talking, and this is real world stuff, that West Virginia American Water system, I know this for a fact, is cobbled together out of a whole bunch of different systems.
Yes. I've worked for contractors that doesn't work for the water company over the past years, a long time. Different contractors under different names, but anyway, they all did the same type of work. And basically, what West Virginia American Water has done in this valley is all the little PSDs that were, or PSCs, which were in there, like, you know, there's a little one here, a little one up the river. They've gotten so old, so antiquated, that it became too expensive to operate, and West Virginia American Water pressured until they were able to buy them out.
At pennies on the dollar.
Well, you know, the bottom line, you know, it's all about keeping the company in the black. You know, they bought all these little systems out, and now the problem is, which we all realize now, when you consolidate your intake source to one place, which happens to be about a mile up from the mouth of the Elk River, you don't have anywhere else to draw water from if something happens to that source. And we found that out.
And look at the number of expansions that went into communities that had to have clean drinking water because they had formerly been on wells, but their wells had been poisoned.
Right.
I mean, that's Printer right there.
Yeah.
That's Printer, West Virginia, where there were six families in one community who one member of each household came down with a form of brain cancer that only happens 1 in 100,000 people in the general population before the city water got there. And
right.
so in a way, what we were talking about a little bit ago about, I think I was talking with Jim One about, you know, not remembering the Depression. Well, the lifespan of a given memory is very apparent, or of the collective memory of a community is very short, Gerald. And
right.
So 20 years from now, I hope I'm wrong, but 20 years from now, there's going to be a cluster of leukemias and various cancers, and there will be another West Virginia governor, just like Gert, who will say,
well, every day somebody says something else makes you sick.
Because, you know, that's what Gert said about the study showing cancer diagnosis increases in mountaintop removal communities.
Every day somebody says something else makes you sick.
Well, yeah, I mean,
what will be the recourse? What will be the recourse for a man and woman who go to the doctor to find out that he has cancer or she has cancer?
Well, we're not really sure what caused it. It's a sad tragedy, Bob. It really is, but we're not really sure.
Well, if
that's
I'm around 20 years from now, I'm going to know.
Well, we all will, but, you know, it's going to be the same old talking points. You know, well, I'm not a scientist, but, you know, the same shit we hear every day.
And 20 years from now, Gary Southern will be out of jail if he ever spends a minute in it. And he'll have him, you know, oh, maybe he won't have a Bentley. Maybe it'll just be a Rolls.
He'll probably spend the same amount of time in jail that the Don Blankenship does, which would probably be none. But anyway, you were talking about the memory. You know, here we are a year later from that, and it's almost like, well, yeah, it happened, but it's okay. We're over it now. You know, that's kind of the mindset, or what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of the attitude that I'm getting. You know, I just, well, you know, well, it was a pain in the ass, but we're over it now. And I just, you know.
Yeah, we're over it until the next time, right, Gerald?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, hell, it just happened here a while back. The city's maintenance garage is right up the river from the water plant. And apparently they've been dumping traffic paint down the sanitary sewer, which apparently is got a hole in the pipe going across the river.
Of course it does.
In a force main, yeah. Well, that turned the river yellow. So, you know, it was all, you know, a panic alert and you know, it was good reason. The sanitary board said, oh, yeah, we've been meaning to fix that.
Oh, and by the way, for people who want to see it, that little 13-minute video, I just put it up over at on our Facebook group, The Horn, T-H-E, H period, O period, R period, N, paren, Head On Radio Network, close paren, frack waste injection in concerned residents, because that's just across the river from me. That's my county. That's Fayette County. You know, that's where our precious little Boy Scouts come to be to jamboree.
Yeah. But well, you know, they're just putting it in the ground, Bob. It won't hurt anything. We're going to squirt that shit under the Ohio River up at the northern part of the state. I mean, you know, it's going to get green lighted. There's not going to be anything opposed to that because of you know, job creators. Which, by the way, I don't want to digress too much, but you know, with the this glut of gas, this shale boom, I'm going to predict it now. It's going to crash. It's going to crash fast. All these jobs that we've been getting, they're not going to be there. They're going to go away quickly. Mark my words. You know, if there's no money in it, they're not going to do it.
And see, it's when I think about, because I mentioned an aqueous Berlin airlift for the 9-county area a little bit ago, Gerald.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is, this region that you and I and a few others live in is badly in need of, and I would argue deserving of, a program with every bit of the money and every bit of the determination of the Marshall Plan that lifted Europe out of its own rubble in the days after the Second World War. We need an Appalachian Marshall Plan. Now, that's not another Appalachian Regional Commission. That's no.
Well,
no, we need a full-on, focused, determined effort to make life better here.
Well, the problem is with that is the biggest percentage of the people here don't see a problem. You know, this is the way it's always been, and you know, don't like it, move. That's just the attitude.
But the thing is, even that's that memory thing, Gerald. They're wrong. This is not how it's always been. I mean, in the days before the coal industry began exploiting this state, it was a very different place. I know enough of my own family's history to know how different it was. And yeah, I know people were poor and they knew they were poor, but by the same token, they were educating their kids. Some of them were going to college and they were just farmers. They were just farmers. And they weren't great big farmers like you get when you cross the Mississippi and you start dealing with the plains and you can just have endless, or even, you know, Illinois, Indiana, where you can have just endless waves of grain growing or whatever. They were subsistence farmers. And I know from looking at my own family history, they were living into their late 80s and their 90s at a time when the median life expectancy of an American male was 46. If you got past childhood, you were looking at a pretty decently long life. And that's what drives me crazy when people say that's how it's always been, because that's just not true. And I think we can find some sort of a median, don't you?
Well, I would hope so. But it's something I've said in the past, you know, we get the government we deserve, and the rest of us have to pay for it, basically. And I wish I had an answer. I really do. And I've said this before. You know, the people of this community, of the whole Appalachian region. I mean, I'm not just talking about West Virginia. I'm talking about Southern Pennsylvania, Western Virginia, North Carolina, all down through there, have always been so willing to take it up the backside for some out-of-state corporate interest, whether it was some coal baron or timber industry. It really doesn't matter, or even now, you know, natural gas. It really doesn't matter. Insert entity here. And,
you know, you hear about all the wealth that coal has brought to this state. Where is it? I mean, really?
Right. Show me it. Show me it. I want to see it right now.
Hey, I'm being as honest as I can. I'm trying to be objective about this. Please.
Well, no, you can drive down to Bramwell and you can see the coal barons' mansions.
I was just there here a while back, not very long ago.
And at one point in time, that was the single wealthiest. That was the single highest concentration of wealth in the entire United States.
There were like 13 millionaires that lived in that town at the height.
Yeah, we're not talking about people who just crossed the line with their first million either.
Yeah, and we're talking 20 millionaires, not 1999 or 2000 millionaires.
No, they had the real Jed Clampett walking around money.
Right.
I mean, and you can see it in the ghost towns. I mean, you can see it in the what would you call it? The hopeful, optimistic kind of buildings that you see in places like Thurmond.
Yeah, which is at the end of nowhere.
Or you can, I mean, go down and see what remains of Welch. Go see what's left of Williamson.
Welch, that is, and another one, War.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever been there. You know, it's really depressing.
Matewan, man.
When you go into these little towns and you see what they once were, and now they're just there.
But the thing is, everybody, I mean, I think the coal barons knew all along, Gerald, that it was not always going to be that way because their intent was never to stay. Their intent was to get what they could and go.
Well, of course. I mean, exploit the region, leave. That's how it's always been. And, before the coal barons, it was the timber industry. I mean, if you don't believe that, go up on the scenic highway in Webster County, Pocahontas County, and go to Black Mountain and see what overforesting does. That's been hundreds of years ago, and it still hasn't recovered.
Right.
It probably never will.
I mean, I was driving around in Roane County just yesterday, and I was just looking at because the leaves are down and everything's kind of barren. And that really affords you an idea, an opportunity to get a look at the lay of the land. And I just pointed out the window and I said, you know, look at all that scrub in there. Because that's all it is scrub.
Yeah, because it's all been timbered.
And the fact of the matter is, I've seen photos, and that's over in the gas patch, because this is not the first gas boom this state's been through.
Right.
I have seen photographs of turn of the century, 1900, Roane County, West Virginia, and been looking at the same thing that was in the photograph, and there was not a tree within 5 miles.
Oh, yeah, I've seen this.
Deer hunting only came back to Roane County in, the last 20, 30 years because there were no deer. There was no anything.
Well, I can remember when I was a kid, just little, my dad, deer season came in. Of course, people that don't live in the area don't realize what a big deal that is. But, first day of deer season, my dad was up in, up north of the Hardy and Pendleton County, up in the Panhandle. That was the only place there were any deer. And they had to hunt the hell out of them to find them. Because there weren't any around here.
Right. And I mean, that's Appalachia in a nutshell. Absolute exploitation.
Oh, of course, that's all it is. And the bad thing is there's no one here to protect it. Because the government damn sure isn't going to do it. And the people who do care are too few in number.
And I don't know if you saw the story or not, but we are one of six states. We are one of only six states in the union, Gerald, that is projected to lose population in the next census.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, what does that say when 44 states are gaining, but West Virginia's losing?
We're always behind.
But it also tells me there's a magnificent opportunity here. You get a new migration into West Virginia of people who want to make this a livable place, and everything changes. But right now, the extraction industries, this is exactly what they want. Because I read a memo years ago authored by Herb Snyder over at Columbia Natural Gas.
That name is familiar, but I didn't know
where,
why.
In which he hypothesized that the best way to for the extraction industries to have their to impose their will upon the state of West Virginia was to intentionally depopulate it down to only the people working in the industry and those supporting the government and schools and so forth, and those too elderly or infirm to move. It was literally a roadmap of ethnic cleansing.
Well,
and they're getting away with
fruition. And right now, here in a few days, they're going to have the government that they want too. Not that they didn't have most of it to begin with, but now they're really going to have their way. Because, let's be honest, a lot of the Dems here in this legislature really aren't Dems. I mean, they're really not.
And a simple majority vote in this state will override any gubernatorial veto.
Right. And
Jay Cruzen points out here, Gerald, he says, you want to see where that wealth from West Virginia is? On down here to South Florida, where them there investment class folks live. And, of course,
yeah,
that's true. Where's Gary?
Yeah, Blankenship's got a home down there. Southern's got a home down there.
Right. Where's Gary Southern's house? Where's his freaking Bentley? It ain't in South Charleston.
No, definitely not.
And Don Blankenship wanted to go home to be with his money for Christmas in Vegas.
Yeah.
Members of the Horn Family Commune congregation who are in Vegas, you're sharing a city with Don Blankenship now.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah. You can have him. We don't want him.
Well, I don't think he'll find many friends anywhere. Even the ones that act nice to him, I doubt are really friends. The man's I just think he's unlikable.
I'm not sure whether he's a sociopath or a psychopath, but he's one of them.
Well, he's got so much money, I guess he just thinks.
No, but see,
I think
he was a sociopath. I mean, if you go back and look at the old documentaries and stuff, I think he was a sociopath back when he was just a humble little martial educated CPA trying to just bleed every last penny out of every ton of coal. I mean, there was never, since it's the season and everything, at least if you read Dickens' A Christmas Carol, you find out that there was somewhere way back there a young Ebenezer Scrooge who enjoyed Christmas. But then he got,
yeah.
But then he got perverted by money and capital and greed and wealth. But that means that there was something, and that's the core of it, that there was something there to redeem. I don't think there was ever any core redeemable anything inside Don Blankenship.
And there may not be.
And that's the kind of person that a civilized culture really does build prisons for. Because you just can't have them wandering around among the general population for the sheer hell that they will create on Earth.
Well, we need to privatize those prisons, to for-profit corporations.
Oh, dear God, yes, of course.
Hey, let's give somebody else some time here.
Gerald, it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, and thank you for helping out as we come down to the end of the year. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, that's another thing I wanted to get out to the listeners. Hey, if you haven't contributed for a while, now would be a good time. I mean, I don't do much, but I do what I can, and there's a lot of people that do. And if you haven't given for a while, please do. Because this is important. We just can't get our voice out. Well, you're certainly not going to do it on Fox, and I don't think you'll get it on cable news anywhere. So with that, I will let someone else have a turn.
All right, Gerald, you take care and have a good evening.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye now. My buddy Gerald, not too awfully far from here. Jay Cruzen noting, one of these days you and I got to have a Deep South conversation on the air. And we will. We absolutely will. And over to the Skype line where I think Larry has been patiently waiting. Hey, Larry.
Hi there.
How are you?
You know, it sure is fun, Bob, to hear Gerald and Jim. They're really a joy to listen to. You know, I'm wondering if you and Gerald and Jim and Devin are in the minority in West Virginia. You know, you guys are so
clear. Oh, yes.
Well, you know, because you guys have such a clear notion of what's happening, you know, and stuff, and can explain it. You know, the way you talk about how horrible the state's been treated, I just, you know, I wish I could go and see it and really know what you all are talking about, because you really don't know how bad things are until you can really, you know, until you're there and you can.
Well, I mean, you can see a lot of what we were, talking about. I mean, you can find pictures of our ghost towns. It's just that our ghost towns aren't all charming and romantic and dusty and full of tumbleweeds like they are in the old West that Time Life does series of books about. These are just broken down remnants of a shattered culture. And if you look up Welch, West Virginia, if you look up Williamson, West Virginia, if you look up War, West Virginia, and just click images on Google, you'll see it. Or just go on Google Earth till the little blue and white boxes start popping up. You'll see it.
Because the only thing that we see with ghost towns is like West Texas, where you, or somebody's idea of what West Texas looks like with the tumbleweeds rolling
right
across the desert.
It's,
you know,
not
that's the Hollywood. That's the Hollywood ghost town.
Right,
that's,
and I could take you along a little road in Fayette County where there were places named Prince and McKendree and, well, any number of other communities, and all there are the outlines of squares and rectangles that are covered in moss and just barely sticking up above dirt level. And that was what, and you know, that's all that remains of a place where they extracted every last bit of wealth that the community had, killed God knows how many people in the process, and then left. I mean, down at my local little awful, and I mean, it's awful pizza. It's terrible pizza. But on the walls of the place, there's a picture of some young dandies, and it's turn of the century, and I know it's before 1913, just because of things you can date from. But they're standing in what looks to be a bar, because there's a bar there, and the old bartender with his apron on and the strings tied in front, and there's bottles of liquor lying in the wall, and a couple of what for that time were salacious photos of scantily clad women.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pool hall in Winona, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
The roof of which only collapsed in the last year or so.
Oh, boy.
But there's young men there. There's some dirt on, youngish men. There's some dirt on their shoes. But they're wearing, you know, derby hats and everything, and they're turning around with their little shot glasses hoisted in the air toward the photographer. And, I mean, it looks like something from the opening credits to Cheers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to say, and I do want to say that I did talk with the Green Party PR person for Southern California, because I've been trying to figure out a way to work with Greens along with working with Democrats, which I really can't do in this society. If you belong to one political party, you can't really work with another, but I'm trying to figure out a way to do it. And I did mention to her about the AIC Act, and I gave her the information. I said, you know, I'd sure like the Green Party to, you know, to do just what you were mentioning to Gerald, that they get behind the, you know, full force behind the AIC Act. She didn't know very much about it.
Of course not.
And,
well, see, that's because this is, see, mountaintop removal, Larry, is deemed to be, and I've had this said to me by no less than senior staff to a member of the United States Senate, a Democrat, a liberal, a progressive. That's a regional issue that the senator really doesn't want to get embroiled in.
Yeah, he doesn't want to alienate the Congress, you know, the people in West Virginia, because he figures that if he does that, he's not going to get a lot of help for his camp. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're right.
His or her. All right. We don't live in a sexist.
This was a him. This was a him.
Okay. But you know, they don't want to go against. You know, they don't want to alienate their colleagues there, because they may need their colleagues. So, I mean, that's the way that works, you know, I think. In any case, you were talking about trans fats and talking about these, and I really didn't listen all that closely, but I don't mind the government telling me that I'm eating crappy food, okay? I don't want somebody saying that I should have the freedom to go out there and eat crappy food. If it's not good for me, what makes them think that I might be rational enough to be able to have the best judgment possible to go out and eat that hamburger?
Oh, look, if I drive by Krispy Kreme donuts and the Hot Now sign's on, rational goes right out the damn window, Larry.
Well, you know, I gotta.
But that's part of it. And see, the other thing, and these right wingers are always, they're all obsessed about money, right?
Yeah.
Well, the fact of the matter is, trans fats are a significant contributor to heart disease and coronary artery, arterial disease. And via Medicaid and Medicare, the government pays for a hell of a lot of medical treatment that arises from those diseases. Still with me?
Yes.
So the government, therefore, has a vested interest in trying to be, you know, this isn't giving a damn about whether Republicans eat trans fats. The government's got a right, I think, you know, we the people, because I don't draw a distinction between us and the people, because it's supposed to be a popular government.
That's right.
I think the government's got a vested right in cutting, in trying to be fiscally responsible with the people's money by banning things.
Well, my question, Bob, is why does the assumption exist that people are always going to be rational, that they are because
Larry, that's the false premise upon which the entire libertarian house of cards resides. And libertarianism is exactly that. It's a house of cards. It is so much baloney that people, you know, people are random, solo actors who don't live in communities, and we're lone wolves, and we always act rationally in our own economic best interest, and it's just crap. But they have to persist in it, Larry, in order to facilitate their economic theory, whose real purpose is simply the upward transfer of wealth.
Yes, and that's why, and I know I've got to go in a second because you've got to say goodbye, but a lot of the neo-Marxist economists talk about, and John Kenneth Galbraith talked about this too, that people are not always rational actors. I mean, if I'm a drug addict, or if I think that, you know, or if I need a drug, I mean, I don't sit there and decide, you know, that's not a rational decision. If I sit there and listen to some advertising, and I'm persuaded by some advertising to go out and buy something that isn't good for me, am I necessarily being rational by making that decision to buy that?
No, and people seldom are. You know, we buy things based on the color of the package. People buy cars for their color and not how the engines perform. I mean, Jesus, rational acting almost never happens inside of economics. But you're right. I got to go, Larry. Good talking to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Good.
And thanks, everybody, for a wonderful Titanic Tuesday. Thanks to everybody who chipped in and helped us meet this evening's goal. And hey, maybe tomorrow night we'll finish out 2014 to the good. You never know. Thanks, everybody. Good night.